This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
It's called protein degradation. And if you're a bad protein in a cancer cell, you'd better get your affairs in order. Because now, thanks to Dana-Farber's foundational work, protein degradation can target cancer-causing proteins and destroy them right inside the cell. This take-no-prisoners approach is making a difference in multiple myeloma and other blood cancers, and is how Dana-Farber is working to treat previously untreatable cancers. Learn more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
A new bill to vote on.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. The Senate has decided it will vote on a new financial rescue package tonight. It will include one provision we talked about yesterday, increasing the limits on FDIC insurance for bank deposits from $100,000 to $250,000. Our reporter in Washington, Steve Henn, joins us as Marketplace continues its coverage of the financial crisis. Okay, Steve, what else is in this bill?
There's another thing that the Senate leadership has decided to wrap into this bill: tax credits for renewable energy. This is an issue that's pretty popular in both parties, but there's been a big fight about how to pay for it. Some talk about also including a relief for the alternative minimum tax, although last night that probably wasn't in the Senate version.
Renewable energy and the alternative minimum tax, what does that have to do with this financial rescue package?
Nothing. But they're looking to pick up Republican votes in the House. The thing is, especially with these tax credits for renewable energy, fiscally conservative Democrats in the House were all for this, but they wanted to pay for it. And they've fought hard to force the Senate to pay for it, too. So by including this, they may actually lose some of those votes on Thursday.
Okay, so they might gain Republican votes and lose Democratic votes?
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, hopefully they're betting they'll gain more than they lose, but they need to pick up at least a dozen, so we'll see.
All right. Steve Henn in Washington, thanks.
Thanks.
These people are unbelievable. We've been asking the question, what happens if there's no bailout? Commentator Robert Reich says the more appropriate question is, who suffers if there isn't one?
If there's no bailout to prevent credit markets from completely freezing up, we're all in trouble because businesses cannot borrow money to keep producing. And we consumers can't borrow money to buy a car or get a mortgage or send our kids to college. All of which means a deep and prolonged recession and lots more people without jobs. Now, that's bad enough, but if you're an early boomer over the age of 55, you may be in even bigger trouble, bailout or no bailout. In an economic crisis, many employers lay off older workers first because their seniority makes them more expensive. And studies document that older workers who lose their jobs face more difficulties finding new ones. That's not your only problem. The house you've been living in for 25 or 30 years and were planning to cash in for retirement is worth far less now than the last time you looked. So is that 401k plan you were counting on. And you don't have enough time before retirement to make up for these losses. Certainly not enough time to reap the gains you expected between now and then. If the economic crisis is as bad as some predict, housing prices and share values might not bounce back for 5 years or more. Japan's meltdown took 10 years to correct. We early boomers, and note I said we, because, sadly, I'm one of you, once had all the advantages. We entered the housing market in the 1970s and 80s when houses were still cheap and reaped the gains when late boomers came into the market and pushed prices up. We also got the plum jobs because we were the first into the post-industrial economy before the boomers who followed us. And many of us got into the stock market early on and rode that great wave. So maybe now we're paying the price for our good fortune then. But that doesn't make this any less painful.
Robert Reich's book, Super Capitalism, is now in paperback.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by LendingTree, where you can choose up to 4 customized loan offers. 1-800-555-TREE. When banks compete, you win. By Constant Contact, dedicated to helping small businesses and nonprofits build stronger customer relationships through email marketing. ConstantContact.com. And by the American Public Transportation Association, committed to helping Americans save on gas and become energy independent at publictransportation.org.
I've been getting a lot of emails about this financial crisis, especially from people trying to understand exactly what's going on in the credit markets. This morning, we're going to do a little primer because it is difficult to understand. We're joined by consultant Peter Cohen. Peter, first question is, why do banks need to lend to each other? Don't they have money already?
Oh, they do have a lot of money already, but the complicated thing about it is they usually use very short-term financing. That is money that they borrow for one day, and at the end of the day, they get a new loan, and they just roll it over. That's the way it normally works, and the reason that banks do that is because it's among the lowest cost ways that you can get money.
But it's not cheap right now, and that's exactly the issue here. The rate that the banks charge each other has gone up so much just in the last few weeks.
Yes, and what it basically boils down to is that banks don't want to lend to each other. They saw what happened when they lent to Bear Stearns, when they lent to Lehman Brothers, and what's happening is that instead of banks lending to each other, the Federal Reserve is stepping in, and they're doing all the lending because they're basically the lender of last resort, and the banks aren't lending to each other, so all the banks are going to the Fed.
Okay, but what is happening to that money?
The banks are hoarding the money because they don't have enough capital. This is the fundamental cause of all this distress. You know, the Fed has been ordering and the Treasury has been ordering them to go out and raise more capital, and they tried earlier in the year to get the money from the sovereign wealth funds over in China and the Middle East, and they made some investments, lost their money, so they're basically stuck. They can't get capital from anywhere else, so here they are going to the Fed, borrowing the money and hoarding it, and just hope that it keeps them from being wiped out.
You can probably imagine how a lot of people feel about this is they made their bed, and now they have to lie in it.
Absolutely, and it would be great if they had been responsible enough to have enough protection for what might happen if things went wrong. But unfortunately, by borrowing more and more money, they have put the entire global system at risk. So unfortunately, we have a situation where we have private profits and socialized losses.
How do we know that this threat to our economy is not being oversold, that it's not being exaggerated?
We don't, and I think we have reason to be suspicious because of what happened back in early 2003 when we were sort of pushed into a war in Iraq. And frankly, there's a lot of people in Congress who don't understand this either, and I think most Americans are hungry for more information so they really know what they're talking about instead of all this fear-mongering.
Well, Peter, this was a very good explainer, and I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Scott.
And we have more coverage at our website, marketplace.org, including new blogs. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening and enjoy your day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.